So I'm currently, for those that care, 2.5 years clean off drink and heroin, cannabis. I'm applying for peer coordinator roles. I'm after my boss's job at the moment. So that's where I'm at. But it's a target, and through DHI and like the platforms they've gave me, like I can do anything. It's taught me that, you know, not to worry, to just apply yourself and it'll be okay.
That's John talking. John has an incredible story and a remarkable ability to articulate it. Well, at least the second part of that statement is accurate. We're going to hear more from John, and we're going to hear many stories, and perhaps our conclusion will be that although John's story is horrific in what happened to him and uncomfortable for us to hear, but I suspect it won't prove exceptional, one of many roads that leads to being disconnected from our known world. Hello, by the way, I'm Dom Chambers, and welcome to the DHI podcast. DHI is Developing Health and Independence. It's all there in the title. And as we hear many stories and contributions from service users, people affected by the issues that we'll be discussing, the experts who know how to help resolve them, and also those professionals and support workers who help people on their journey to recovery, we will understand what a pivotal role DHI has in all this, and the vital services it is providing here in the Bath and North East Somerset and Bristol regions and beyond with its partnership working. And it is precisely that that is a primary incentive for doing these podcasts. We want even more people to hear about DHI, the services that they provide, the difference that they can make to people's lives, the difference, indeed, they can make between life and death. Many of the issues DHI deal with are not comfortable topics for many of us, but I cannot think of a single person in the 30 years that I've been professionally broadcasting, or indeed in my family and friends circles, who are not affected one way or another by these issues. We want to reduce stigmas and get people more aware of the help that is out there for us and for our loved ones. Our purpose is to reduce prejudice and to generate the increased sense of inclusion. And as we hear the stories and look further into the work of DHI, naturally, there is a call to action in that. It is that call to action for anybody, whether it's ourselves or people we know, who are looking to reconnect with a world of living and working in the community.
The DHI Podcast with Dom Chambers. Developing health and independence.
So let's get to it. Let's find out what it's all about and indeed where it came from. And who better to answer that than the founder and current chief executive, Rosie Phillips.
DHI began in 1999 as a charity that seeks to turn around the lives of those who face multiple disadvantage by focusing on the clustering of serious social harms such as homelessness, substance misuse, mental ill health, violence, abuse and poverty.
Rosie's words there leading us to a timely mention then of the vision of DHI, which is the first thing to greet you when you click dhi-online.org.uk. Our vision is to end social exclusion by ensuring that everyone has their basic needs met and is able to thrive by contributing to the richness and well-being of their community. So right at the heart of this, it is all about ending social exclusion, helping people rebuild their lost connections, and signposting them to the basic needs that we all require to live. Interestingly, DHI came about in the context of the challenges around homelessness. DHI is a charity, and the chair of trustees is Sarah Davis. She takes up the story.
I think the principal driver in the early days was that our now chief executive, Rosie, was meeting people in her previous role in the housing association that were having to be evicted because of an addiction problem of some sort. And therefore, Rose's piloting was to offer a service that would get alongside those people and work with them so that they did not face eviction. And I think the ongoing lesson for us is that people can't start to address something like a drug or alcohol addiction if they do not have a roof over their heads and food to eat. Those are the basics for the starting point for people. And once they feel secure and safe in a home and they have food on the table, then they can begin to look at other aspects of their life.
In hearing what Sarah had to say, what was appealing to me is that from the very start, it always had a holistic approach. People don't really descend into alcoholism or drug abuse randomly. There's a whole set of circumstances that drive them to those eventualities. And it's those causes that DHI is really focused on. But there's more to the holistic approach.
It's holistic not only for the individual, but we support those around them, close family, close friends. We support the families as well, because for every person with an addiction problem, there are relatives involved who want to support and help, but they don't know the best way to do that. And it can be very, very lonely. It's a real stigma for many people having a relative who has a drug problem or an alcohol problem. And being able to get those relatives together with others that they can share with and help them learn how best to support the families. So that's also the wider holistic approach to what we do, not just the individual, but the loved ones that are around them.
The vision and purposes of DHI are established. And over the course of these podcasts, we'll find out much more about how they signpost individuals to the areas they need to rebuild their lives. And as to that point that Sarah touched on at the end of what she was saying there, we will certainly find time to explore the support services for loved ones and people who care, and we'll hear their stories as well. And you'll notice that I keep talking about stories, for the central thrust of what we're doing here has to be about people's personal experiences. Yes, we want the experts. Yes, we want to know from the professionally trained supporters. But ultimately, we're really going to find out about this organisation through the experiences of the people who've lived it. So by that token, we'll hear from many past clients who will testify to the vital importance of DHI's intervention that turned their journey ultimately into one of positive progression. In all those stories, there's generally a point in which something fundamental has shifted that starts to lever despair into hope. And we will get to that point with John, who we heard from at the start of the programme. And here he is now explaining something of the background that led to his addictions and behavioural difficulties.
I was a young child and, I was involved in abuse by my... I refused to call him Dad, I'll call him Paul. I had a brother, there was 10 months difference between us, both in the same year at school, and we both got treated totally different, and unfortunately I'd be physically assaulted, and the emotional abuse, I suppose, was worse, even though I was getting thrown off ceilings and stamped on. But, you know, it really hurt knowing that my family didn't love me, and through that I was then put into foster care because I was fighting Paul, and I wasn't aware of the services, and I didn't really get any help as a 16 to 25 year old, so I was in and out of hostels, and then I found drugs and drink, and that compounded the problems I had.
DHI offers people who are at their lowest point, it gives them opportunities, it gives them choices, it gives them confidence, and it enables them to rejoin society, for want of a better phrase, and be the people they should be.
That's Ian Kesey explaining what DHI's role is when somebody decides that they need some help. And Ian is in a good position to know this, having worked with DHI for a long time, and he's a health and wellbeing programme manager for Public Health England, and in fact, the lead in the South West for alcohol misuse, ageing well and dementia. Emma Daly, as the team leader at the Midsomer Norton DHI Hub, sees all this at the front end.
Part of our work is trying to empower our clients to accept the fact that there is an issue there and trying to, help them to develop themselves and develop their own skills and coping mechanisms and to see a way forward, to see that there is a life beyond what their issues are.
One of the most powerful pieces of radio I've ever heard happened completely unexpectedly. I was driving around North East Somerset, listening to the radio station that I run, Summer Valley FM, and enjoying a kind of retro year type programme with one of our long-standing presenters, who, incidentally and in private, was quite open about the fact that he was in recovery from alcohol dependency, and he was several years into that recovery. He was actually talking about a year in which the Sheffield band Pulp had released an amazing album. But for him, that triggered this association with giving up drink. And I don't suppose he really intended to do this, but he went into a description of what happened on that first night. The first night he went to bed in a non-intoxicated state. The first time that had happened for many years. He turned out the light, he laid back in the bed, and he thought, what happens now? Is there another switch to turn off? I've no idea what to do. How do I get to sleep? This point in somebody's recovery makes them incredibly vulnerable. Tony is an ex-client of DHI, whom I met recently at the 20th anniversary of the first supported dry house that DHI opened in Bath. And he very clearly remembers that moment.
When you take the drink and the drugs away, the person is left with themselves. And at that point, that can be quite scary, but also quite exciting as well, because that moment of, I don't know who I am. And I think even saying that from some people, I've seen 50-year-olds, 60 to 20-year-olds saying, I have no idea who I am. And at that point, that's when the journey for me starts, that inner journey.
You know, I was masking a lot of things with drinking and using drugs. I was numbing reality because I was aware as a kid that it was wrong what was going on. And I had very close relationships with other people, my friends' parents, and, you know, they would stick up for me. And you know, it was nice to have that reassurance that what was going on was wrong. But however, I never really dealt with any of that because I didn't know how to. You know, I was a young kid. I mean, I was in top sets at school. I played football for my county, my district, but I was constantly getting in trouble. And I suppose my home life was a reflection of that in school.
In making this programme, I've heard some amazing stories, and people have shared in public what amounts to some very personal journeys. Sometimes, and this is an entirely reasonable position to take, people will share their stories, but they don't want to hear their voice, and they don't want me to use their voice in the programme. One such person, we'll call her Sue, articulated succinctly the moment she went to seek help. She headed to the DHI hub in Midsummer Norton, but as she got there, she just couldn't quite get through the door. So she hung back, waiting and wondering what to do next. An existing service user of DHI saw her and went out. I think she wanted a cigarette, and Sue was smoking, so this naturally drew them together, and they started to connect. Emma takes up the story.
And I think that was a turning point for Sue, was being able to have that reassurance that she's going to enter a room full of people with exactly the same problems. You know, that isolation that she's felt up until that point, almost, you know, the weight's lifted for her because all of a sudden she's in a room full of people who can empathise with her and are actually experiencing similar situations. We support people in a way that's helpful to them. And I'm just thinking about what you said about people not necessarily realising that it may be an issue right now, but actually part of the work we can do is early intervention, trying to educate and influence and help people to understand maybe the effects of alcohol and what that might be. And if that just sets the ball rolling for our clients and then they can start to sort of figure out that bigger picture of themselves, then absolutely that's something that we can provide as well.
With John, I was keen to know when was that moment for him? And his answer serves to remind us that the recovery journey is a very complex process.
There were plenty of moments, like a counsellor once said to me, you've got to be prepared to fall flat on your face many times, because every time you fall flat on your face, hopefully you'll take one learning opportunity and not apply it the next time. So when you make all these mistakes, you'll come to a point where you're not going to be making as many mistakes that time there and then. So it was a very ongoing process.
As we've established, John's story is complex, and his recovery made more complicated by the fact that he was taking drugs, he was in prison, he was violent. But sitting there alone in a room having this conversation, this gently spoken giant of a man who seemed to have a very good grip on the complexities of his own story, as his journey reveals itself, I sensed that his decision to get better and to lead a different kind of life grew ever so slowly but steadily from deep within as the chaos abounded all around him. When, in all this, I was keen to know, did he get involved with DHI?
I had a shared care worker, and I suppose I can be quite personable like now, you know. And we build a rapport, even though I have really bad trust issues, and it's not surprising. But I put a lot of trust in her, and she was really honest with me. I really appreciated that because, you know, I was a very violent person. I was violent because I was let down, and that was something I was good at, was being violent. But yeah, the shared care worker, I just building a rapport over the many times seeing, and she was like, John, do you know what? You have got an insight, you know, and what have you thought about giving back? Because I think you'd be quite okay at it. And it gave me pause for thought, and I thought, really, could I do it? Because in the back of my mind, I'm very, like I said, I've got a narcissism personality disorder. Yeah, I think I'm amazing. I think I'm great. I think I can do anything. But really, when I think about it, I'm thinking, oh, like, that's quite a big ongoing process. It was daunting, but I went and spoke to Nip from DHI Bristol. And from that, I started building a rapport with him. And like I said, I was violent and I couldn't be trusted around other people. In prison, I was high risk. I couldn't share a cell with someone else. Even though I got put down for training, I didn't actually start the training until about 5 or 6 months after, because the groups are too large. They were like 11 to 13 people strong every time. And I had to wait for a group where there was like 4 other people and myself, you know, and where I could keep a bit of distance, because at that point, 2.5 years ago, I was still in a place where I was still finding myself. I was very early on my journey. I'm still on my journey.
John is now at a point when his progression seems steady and consistently in a forward direction. But just as anyone going through this kind of process is bound to have days of stepping backwards and days of stepping forwards, and no doubt a few sidestepping as well. Well, being in prison, of course, adds whole new levels of challenge. And John starts to articulate why authority was such an issue for him. And as he starts this section of his story, he tells me that he tries not to
call them screws. but I use the term officers because they are doing a job. But when you're locked up all the time and they tell you what to do, I never really dealt with authority very well, because from when I was a kid, my parents were... You know, every time they use that tone of voice, I got scared. So if they use that tone of voice with me, Shenton, get in your cell, that'd make me go, you what? I'd be very tense. And there was an occasion where I actually assaulted an officer, and I got put in segregation. And, the other inmates were locked up, the buzzer was rang, and they were clapping me off the wing. And, I went to SEG, and then a week later I got put on, I think it was a G-wing or F-wing, or can't remember, I've been to quite a few prisons, sorry. I had this opportunity, after doing the SMART training, to do SMART alongside some people working within the prison. And they weren't officers, they were just delivering SMART. I don't know what the job role was, but I came in and sat down, had a coffee with some of the officers that used to lock me up daily, and that was a wow moment for me, something I never thought was possible. But that's one of the rewards of recovery, that like in recovery you get, like now I have an opportunity to share my story with a wider audience. I had an opportunity to gain another skill, even though I'd done it a couple of times, but refine my public speaking. There's opportunities, and I'm all about grabbing them at the moment.
Through DHI, John found that he had the space to explore and develop that side of him that wanted to improve, that wanted a better life for himself and for others. And it's that point that is crucial. It's crucial to John's story, and it's crucial to DHI and the recovery process, that as people step along their journey to that better place, they do want to reach out, they do want to help others who are at an earlier stage of recovery. I met John because I attended a DHI event in Bristol in late 2018. It was quite a large auditorium and there was a sizable crowd of people there looking at a stage, and John was on that stage. He was telling his story and there was no question that he had everyone's attention. I was there to record conversations with a lot of people that would go into these podcasts. But when I heard John, I thought to myself, if I only walk away with one recorded conversation this evening, it has to be with him. To have a powerful story to tell is one thing, but to have the skills to tell it to others is incredibly empowering and is a real gift that can help others as they work themselves out of whatever their version was of that chaos that John had found himself in. As he continues to find the strength in his own recovery, peer mentoring has become really important to him and his continued involvement with DHI. Inevitably, of course, I asked him how he is now.
So I'm currently, for those that care, 2.5 years clean off drink and heroin, cannabis. I'm applying for peer coordinator roles. I'm after my boss's job at the minute. So that's where I'm at, but it's a target, and through DHI and like the platforms they've gave me, like I can do anything. It's taught me that, you know, not to worry, to just apply yourself and it'll be okay.
So interesting that John caveats the details of his recovery and the fantastic progress that he's made with that "for those that care." That comes from somebody whose battle against the world stems from that isolated state and the sense that nobody cares. His story and the story of DHI and their role stands testament to the fact that although we may not realise it, we are not alone and that there is somebody out there who cares. Thank you for joining me on this first outing of the DHI podcast. One of the reasons why I became a broadcaster was because it's just a great way of finding out more about the world. I've learnt a huge amount in doing this work, and I hope that you've learnt a little bit more about what DHI does. And I can tell you, there's a lot more to come. Many conversations, many stories, and much to learn in future editions of the programme. Do let us know what you think and get in touch with your ideas and feedback. And of course, if you want to know any more about anything we've been discussing.
The DHI Podcast with Dom Chambers. Developing health and independence.
So interesting that John caveats the details of his recovery and the fantastic progress that he's made with that "for those that care." That comes from somebody whose battle against the world stems from that isolated state and the sense that nobody cares. His story and the story of DHI and their role stands testament to the fact that although we may not realise it, we are not alone and that there is somebody out there who cares. Thank you for joining me on this first outing of the DHI podcast. One of the reasons why I became a broadcaster was because it's just a great way of finding out more about the world. I've learnt a huge amount in doing this work, and I hope that you've learnt a little bit more about what DHI does. And I can tell you, there's a lot more to come. Many conversations, many stories, and much to learn in future editions of the programme. Do let us know what you think and get in touch with your ideas and feedback. And of course, if you want to know any more about anything we've been discussing. You can find us on social media. Search Developing Health and Independence on Facebook. Or for Twitter, it's at @DHI_online. Or email info@DHI-online.org.uk. And of course, you are encouraged to subscribe to this podcast on your favourite podcast app. And that's just about it. But before I go, the conversation with John was over, but in true journalist style, I flipped a little extra question on at the end, and I asked him how he felt about talking to me and sharing his story.
When I was approached, I was a bit unsure because I had a couple of people approach me, and I do find things overwhelming, but like I just said, it's like, don't worry, do it, you know, apply yourself, and you'll never know what comes of it. So I'm grateful you gave me the opportunity to share my story, and thank you.
And thank you for telling it to us as well.
Thank you very much.